Hi.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything is fine. Hey, everybody. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Relax. Everything is just fine.
Coming to you live from the 215. My name is Kyle Pagan, and I'm joined, as always, by my man, Mark Henry. We've got a great episode for you today. We've got Bob Wankel. Everybody who loves Wankel Wednesdays is going to love this one. But before we get into Bob Wankel, we got to talk about Tap Room. Philly, are you tired of paying Drizzly and GoPuff's ridiculous fees? I know you are. I am. You have to be too. Try Tap Room. And just for everything's fine listeners, they're offering $50 off a $100 order or more with code FINE50. That's P-H-I-N-E 50 at pa.taproom.com. Taproom spelled T-A-P-R-M. It's a huge selection of high-quality, hard-to-find beers, ciders, seltzers, and more. They'll deliver the drinks right to your door with none of those hidden service fees. Get your order in before 4 p.m. today, and they'll get the drinks to you by today. Be a hero. College football Saturdays, NFL Sundays. Tell the guys, hey, listen, I got $50 off for you. Thank me later. Now let's get into Bob Wankel. All right. We've got a special one today. We've got Bob Wankel on. We will not be doing the Wankel Wednesday bit until pitchers and catchers report. We're still hammering out contracts. The lawyers are still getting involved to see if Bob is coming back for the baseball season. We might have some other guys out there. Matt Gelb, Matt Breen, Todd Zalecki. He's got a vote. We're going to see if they're available maybe on Wednesdays. And then we'll decide if Bob comes back. But Bob, have you missed your regular court-mandated weekly Wednesday appearance here on Everything's Fine?
Yeah, it's good to see you guys. I miss telling you that the Phillies weren't going to make the playoffs every week. It was like a nice part of my routine, my weekly routine. You know, I think there was one week where I actually strayed from the path a little bit. I was like, oh, maybe they'll do it. But, you know, I like to bring that daily or that weekly dose of negativity to the show. So I'm glad that we can do that here the day after the Bryce Harper, wins the MVP award.
How about that? What's your first thoughts process of that? Like, I guess it's kind of diminished because, like, it feels good. I'm happy in the sense that the contract looks better now. Like, all the contract hater guys, I hate the contract haters about the Bryce Harper deal. You do the deal no matter what. You do the deal, you get the guy. How do you feel about it, you know, in terms of longevity, in terms of his kind of perception here?
Yeah, man. Like, listen, first of all, he deserved it. I thought that, you know, it's funny when you look at the writers and their ballots and how they rank these guys out. I mean, some of these guys that had Harper third, fourth, fifth or worse down the line is insane. You can't tell me that there's not a little bit of home cooking there, right? Like, so he was, to me, the clear-cut MVP. I mean, I know they only win 82 games. I know they don't make the playoffs. But when you look at the second half that he had, borderline historic, certainly for this franchise. And you know what? I'll tell you this. It's easy to kind of crap on the Phillies. Like, you know, they haven't made the playoffs in a decade. Everything that they do, you kind of roll your eyes at. But, like, it's good for the organization, too. Like, I had a couple people say today, like, you know, like, there's no momentum. Like, he won an award. They didn't make the playoffs. Who cares? But, like, I actually do think that there can be something positive that can kind of like ignite something in an organization when you get a prestigious award like this. And if you're a Phillies fan here and you're 35 years old, 40 years old, you saw Rollins, Howard, and now this. I mean, this doesn't happen all the time. So I think it's a pretty special thing. I think that for Phillies fans, they should celebrate it, you know, while still being upset that their team has woefully underperformed for 10 years.
How does it compare to the Claude Giroux 17-18 season?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's hard to say. I mean, that Claude Giroux 17-18 season is, for my money, maybe the most underrated season in any sport ever. I mean, actually, I think even when you take a step out beyond sports and you extend it into the corporate world, I mean, like, I think it might be one of the most five heroic, impressive performances in any field ever.
there's been a lot of talk about voting, a lot of talk about ballots. You mentioned it there. I mean, we'll get to Cy Young talk a little bit too. But I think the story of the weekend is someone doing the right thing, and that someone is Jim Salisbury putting Tatis putting Soto sixth and seventh. Was this a coordinated effort? Is Salisbury hitting you up, you know, trying to figure out the math to do that balloting? You know, what's your thoughts on that ballot?
You know, I can't speak for Jim. When I saw the ballot, I kind of was like, yeah, all right. Like, this is, we'll say, different. I guess my thought would be that he doesn't maybe value some of the analytics stuff that the way that other guys do. I think maybe in the case of Tatis specifically, the injuries and maybe some of the defensive deficiencies. If you're going to vote those guys that far down the line, which I personally would not have, I think that those are the things that you have to be looking at. You know, whether it's your availability, you know, paired with maybe your defense, and that's the only thing I got. Like, I don't want to speak for Jim. I'm not knocking Jim, but like, yeah, that's not how I would have done it.
Oh, I'm definitely not knocking him. I'm praising him. He did the right thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Oh, did you see Todd Rozhak from the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal? He had Wheeler worked fourth behind Corbin Burns. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah. I mean, in a case like that, I do think that. So it's like, let's talk through this, right? Like, I mean, you are predisposed to probably, or, you know, inclined to vote for the guy that you watch all the time. So, like, I don't really have an issue with that as long as the guy has a legit case. And in the case of Corbin Burns, like, yeah, like, is it the greatest injustice in the history of the world that he won Cy Young? No. But, I mean, I do think that if you're a Milwaukee writer, you – and let's just – like, here you go. Take a step back. You work and you cover a team. And, like, yes, you're supposed to, you know, play it straight and not show bias. But, you know, hey, like, listen, that ballot becomes public. You voted for their guy. I think that people in the organization see that. I think that there, you know, there could be a little bit of like a – you voted for a guy, you did right by us. Here's maybe a little bit more access, or that interview that we would have taken 3 weeks to do. Maybe we can turn around and do it sooner. You know, and I don't know. I mean, that probably does happen in some organizations. Some, it probably doesn't. But to me, when you have a guy that you see every day and you put him up there, okay. But when you have a guy that's going to be in direct competition with your guy and you bump him all the way down, it's kind of like, ooh, you know, that guy out in Cincinnati too. And I know the Reds didn't have, anybody in these races, but like, my God, that was maybe the worst ballot I've ever seen. It was like comically bad on the Cy Young front. So I don't know, man, you know, people see what they see. You know, you argue with your friends about sports, you go and listen to sports talk radio. People don't agree. Twitter, they don't agree. So, I mean, even professionals, they don't agree when it comes to stuff like this.
So how would you have put your ballot together for the Cy Young? Who would you have ranked in the top three, and why would Ranger Suarez be number one on that list?
Yeah. You know, Ranger Suarez was only seven starts short of winning Cy Young this year. Listen, I actually probably I probably would have gone Scherzer number one, honestly, and I would have gone Wheeler number two and Burns number three. And after that, who really cares? You know, I just look at Scherzer, and I know that he was traded midway through the season. I know that he went to a team that would have won 100 games probably without him. I know he kind of got lost in a shuffle almost out there. I just thought, for my money, watching him as many times as I did this season, I just thought that he was the best pitcher. And I think that you can kind of take some of the numbers and twist those numbers to make that argument. Now, when it comes to Zach Wheeler, I would not have been surprised if he won. I have a problem with Wheeler against Burns, though. I do. I mean, I do think, and you guys know that I'm a little bit of a stat head or like a stat geek, and I value those numbers, but at the end of the day, when you look at the workload that Zach Wheeler took on in proportion to Corbin Burns, you know, some of the dings that Wheeler gets in his numbers are frankly because he's just in the games longer. And, you know, I think that there's something to be said for that. The fact that that dude took the ball the way that he did and seemed to lock down so many big wins for the Phillies in key spots and go deep into games consistently. And then you pile in the strikeout numbers, some of the individual game performances that he had. I'm surprised. I'm really surprised. I know that baseball is headed the way that it is and the way that we view it is changed, but I just thought that Wheeler's workload would have meant something here, and it didn't.
Yeah, why do we not like the workhorse anymore? I feel like we got over that in the Felix Hernandez days, where like maybe the maybe the record wasn't there, but the ERA and the innings were there. I feel like, I think the analytics kind of love that.
The game in at large, I think, is kind of moved away from, you know, valuing guys that go seven, eight innings or, you know, can consistently pitch deep into games. But it's, you know, what Wheeler did this year was kind of such an outlier. You know, when you look at the rest of the league, that I think that you have to credit him for that. Like, you know, you can talk about ERA plus, you can talk about strikeouts per nine and whips and, you know, FIP, and you can do all of those things. But at some point you just have to say, like, damn, this dude was a beast this year. Like, this guy was doing something that other guys in baseball weren't doing. Like, he was taking the ball and he was giving us an automatic seven innings every game. I mean, like, I don't know how, you know, because it was such an anomaly and because it was such an outlier, I'm stunned, frankly, that more people didn't look at that and say, you know, dude, that's the one thing that's really different about this guy and sets him apart. And, oh, by the way, his numbers were fucking awesome beyond that. So, you know, I didn't pick him. I wouldn't have picked him, I should say. But over Burns, like, yeah, it surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember specific games during the season where Girardi would send Wheeler back out there in the eighth inning with 115 pitches, 109 pitches. And it's like, if he just didn't do that two or three times, maybe we're looking at a team that had an MVP and a Cy Young. I guess there's been a lot of this reaction on Twitter of, you know, if the Phillies really did have the best pitcher and the best hitter, they would have won more than 82 games. What do you think about Zach Wheeler being punished for Didi Gregorius, Odubel Herrera, and a terrible bullpen being bad? And, you know, it seems like there is probably some of that logic in the voters. Do you think that that kind of seeped into this voting?
Yeah, it probably did. I actually think that usually that impacts MVP more, you know, I really do. But in this case, it didn't. And yeah, I mean, when it actually talking about Wheeler specifically, I mean, you know how bad the Phillies defense was this year, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about a guy that puts the ball on the ground. Yeah, he misses bats. But I mean, at some point, if the Phillies had a league average defense or an above average defense, what do those numbers look like over the course of 30 starts? They're probably better, you know? And then you talk about like Didi Gregorius and Odubel Herrera. Like, yeah, I mean, how many games did Zach Wheeler, and I know that wins have been completely diminished in terms of a pitcher stat, but I mean, there are, you know, probably a handful of games where Wheeler had to throw 15, 20 more pitches to get through. There were probably handfuls of games that he could have won that they didn't. I mean, yeah, I think that there's probably somewhat of a correlation there. Sure.
You want to talk Eagles now? Go ahead.
I mean, wait, we're going right to the Eagles. We got some hot stove to talk.
That's true. I forgot about that. Go ahead.
We got our hitting coach going on live on TV and telling someone to shush when talking about a player. So that's obviously going viral on Philly's Twitter. Do you think Kyle Schwarber is on his way to Philadelphia? Do you think Schwarber is someone that they'd be interested in? Do you have any idea what the contract would look like?
You know what? I mean, honestly, I don't. And, you know, I'll tell you, Kyle Schwarber makes some sense from an offensive standpoint, right? You know, you're going to have the DH in the National League this year. I mean, it's almost a foregone conclusion. And, you know, if he comes here, again, like, you have to make sure, like, there has to be a DH, because, like, you're talking about the Phillies' biggest issues. Like, yes, they need another middle of the order bat. And frankly, when I sit down and I go, what is my biggest priority for this team this year? It's middle of the order bat. They need, and I know they need a leadoff hitter, right? Like, I know that they need help at the top, but, like, I need another thumper in there to, like, kind of elongate that lineup. Like, you give me Hoskins, Harper, Real Muto, and a dude that can hit 35, 40 home runs and drop him in. So Real Muto's not your 4-5 hitter, you know? Like, you can hit him second if you wanted to. You could hit him third if you wanted to. You could hit him sixth if you wanted to. Like, that would be great. Like, I can't have, though, in a lineup, JT Real Muto be my third biggest power threat. Like, I can't have that. I need another guy. So when you look at the way that Schwarber swung the bat, he kind of had this like reemergence last year, you know, and you consider where he was at in Washington, who he was working with. I mean, it makes some sense here. So, yeah, I mean, would I be on board with that? Sure. But they've got to then make, you know, corresponding moves to tighten up the defense. You cannot go into 2022 with that same defensive, you know, alignment, you know, and if left field ended up being occupied by Kyle Schwarber, I mean, that's a downgrade, right? So you've got to come up with something here. they have to address, in my opinion, they also have to address center field. Like, I will tell you this. If you say, like, we're going to go out and we're going to spend on the bullpen and we're going to spend on a big bat, and then we're going to come back and we're going to leave center field up to some combination of Adam Haseley, Mickey Moniak, Roman Quinn, like, I'm out. I can't have it.
So, do you feel the same way defensively that you do about Schwarber with Castellanos and Conforto, or do you feel like they're a little bit less of a negative on defense? And
you know, I'm sure
you like their spot.
I would be lying to you if I told you I looked at the deeper numbers. Like, I really have not. From my perception, I would think that Castellanos is not as much of a liability. Conforto is definitely not as much of a liability. I love Castellanos. I love him as a hitter. That would be a guy, if they added him into the middle of the order, I'd be excited about. But same thing, you know, I think that they have to make really marked upgrades in that infield, or, you know, across the board and in the infield, I should say, in addition to the outfield, which we're talking about. So, dude, you know, they've got holes. Like, one thing that you kind of wish coming out of 2021, now that I've sat back and looked at it, and I don't know how you guys feel, but you end this season, it would be cool to say, like, hey, they've got a Cy Young candidate. They've got, you know, some help in the middle of that rotation now with Ranger Suarez. They just need to go out and do this. Like, they need to just go out and get a closer, or they need to just go out and get one more bat, and then this team is legit. It's not that crystal clear, though. Like, there are so many variables and uncertainties, and it's like, yeah, even if they do this or they get that guy, like, you know, you remember, like, the Eagles go out, they sign T.O. Like, I know, like, I mean, that's I know I'm older than you guys, but, like, the Eagles went out and signed T.O., and it was like, boom, they got the dude. Even with the Phillies, like, when they went out and they got Lee back in 11, it was like, holy shit, right? Like, they're going. If the Phillies signed Kyle Schwarber, do you feel like, oh, yeah, like, here we come, NL East? Like, you don't. And it's a shame. Like, they've got to do a lot of different things, and, you know, we'll see. They got time. I think that they have the right people. I like what they've done this year in the front office. I got to assume that they feel like enough is enough. This is Dombrowski's first full offseason. How many more years of Hoskins, Harper, Realmuto, Wheeler, Nola can you waste? I mean, I feel like that all the contextual stuff is starting to circle where it's go time. We'll see.
Is there anyone at the top of your mind, if they sign, they could sign this all season, that's like, okay, it's go time?
No.
There's just too many holes?
I just think there's too – I just still think there's too many holes. I think that if you went out and you got a stud closer, you got another middle-of-the-order bat, you have somebody that can play defense, that man center field every day, that can provide an 800 OPS, like – for my money, like, I don't think they'll do it, but, like, I actually think that they need more rotation depth. You know, like, are we willing to say, like, oh yeah, Zach Eflin will come back, you know, in April or May at the latest, and he'll just slot right back in and he'll be good Zach Eflin? Like, we don't know that. So, I mean, you know, I would love to see another starting pitcher added, but are they going over the tax? I don't know. Until they do that, there's no way to say they're going to do that.
One more question before we get to the birds, as long as Kyle doesn't have any more Phillies questions. I'm on Instagram watch. Gene Segura allegedly has wiped out his Instagram and Twitter of Phillies mentions or anything like that, unfollowed a bunch of people. Do you think Gene Segura is maybe getting traded? Do you think I'm maybe too much on social media? What do you think?
So I actually saw someone tweet about that. And so then I went to his Instagram account and I saw that he kind of wiped everything clean. I did not follow Gene on Instagram previously. Did you? Like, do you know?
I did. It's there's a language barrier.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there? Yes, there's a language barrier. He does not talk in English a lot. Okay. Mike Schmidt says he can't lead a team.
Yeah.
I think he watched The Social Dilemma on Netflix and was like, this is what I saw, was like his story was like, I need privacy.
I actually translated it because I saw all the Philly stuff go away and I was like, okay. So I pulled up a Spanish to English translator and I was like, what does this say? And I wish, like, because it was his story, like, you couldn't copy and paste it or anything. Yeah. So I actually had to, like, manually do it with, like, all the accents and everything. And I'm like,
you're not paid enough.
Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, you know, like, is this going to say, like, I'm done in Philadelphia? Like, is it going to be something really juicy? But it actually translates out to saying you don't care about privacy because you have nothing to hide. It's like saying you don't care about freedom of speech because you have nothing to say. So, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, he may have watched the documentary and just said, like, I'm wiping it clean. I have no clue. But it wasn't like, I am no longer the second baseman of the Phillies. I hope Bryce Harper doesn't win MVP. Screw off, you know, like it didn't say. Yeah, Gene Segura's Instagram has had some changes. I don't know if he'll be here next year. Like, he had a really nice year. Maybe there's value where you get creative and say, like, we're going to trade something good to get something good. I have no clue.
Do you think that players out there or teams out there are more urgent or more kind of panicking to try to get things done before the strike? It does seem like we've gotten more than I've expected so far. I expected it to kind of drag out like it usually does. Who knows how long some of the bigger names will drag out, but what's your kind of thoughts on this impending strike and the relation to free agency?
Yeah, you've seen some movement. I think a lot of it's going to be about player preference. I think that there's some people that want to have their plans intact. They want to know, you know, and there are a lot of different variables that go into this, but I do think that there's some players that want to have their concrete plan. Like, this is where I'm going to be next spring. This is what I'm doing. Like, let's get this going here a little bit. And then I think that there's going to be some guys that are more than willing to kind of take it and let it sit a little bit. I don't get the sense, and like, I could be very wrong, but I don't think, I mean, listen, the owners and the MLBPA have long had a very, tumultuous, tenuous, you know, relationship. I gotta say, I don't get the, like, if someone asked me the other day, like, are they gonna play baseball on time this year? Like, I think so. I don't think that we're talking about like work stoppages here where, you know, the season's starting late or anything like that. I mean, I guess it's possible. But, you know, I don't know. It's hard to talk about it because you just don't really know once lawyers get into the room, like, where this thing's going. And so I don't want to come on here and be like, yeah, this is exactly what's going to happen. Or like, this is what I think. I would be disingenuous if I told you I really had a strong feeling on it.
What's the biggest grievances as a guy who's like totally checked out from baseball and is waiting until pitchers and catchers report?
I mean, I am checked out. Like, and I like, that's the thing. Like, I look at it, like, I cover it, and then my job responsibilities just have me completely walk 10 steps back. And I don't even, you know, I'm not in the know at this point. Like, we could talk about stuff in August and September and, you know, I'm all dialed in right now though. Mm-hmm. Just have a loose eye on it. I talk to the people I talk to, and that's kind of it, you know? I mean, there are a lot of different things going on here. I mean, they do have to hammer out the DH. They have to hammer out salary floors. They have to hammer out, you know, one of the biggest issues, like Scott Boras talks about this all the time. I think he came out a week or two ago and basically said, you know, half the league right now isn't trying to win. Like, there's only, like, I think he said 13. I think that was the number he used. Like, there are 13 teams trying to win a World Series in 2022. I think that, you know, whether or not that's a conversation that is directly had in the room this year or not, like, I don't know. But I think that that's one of the biggest problems with the game. And I think that that's one of the biggest issues that the Player Association is going to have, is that there's just not enough teams that are trying to be competitive. And then that kind of shrinks spending a little bit. So, you know, I think that that's, in general terms, I think a huge problem for the game right now. And I actually think Scott Boras is right, you know, on that front.
We ready to talk some birds, Kyle? I know you. I know you've been dying over here.
No, not really. I actually love this Phillies talk more than anything.
Oh, let's go.
How long until we,
Kyle, Mr. Phillies?
Yeah, I'm a big Phillies guy. I had a whole Zach Wheeler. I went on a rant about Zach Wheeler in my head. How long until we bully this 27-year-old assistant GM out of town? Is he too analytical?
Assistant GM, yeah. Listen, he came from the Rays, so it's a great hire.
It's a great hire, but I'm just saying he's too analytical for us. You saw the coach of the year. I want to talk about the Gabe Kapler coach of the year thing. I know you've always been on the guy that, hey, maybe we kind of, you know, didn't give that guy a fair shake.
Yes.
I also am on the end that stuff just doesn't work here, the analytical stuff. I think when you go to a tech hub or a more analytical approach like San Francisco, where that stuff is kind of more tech savvy and whatnot, you know, Johnny from the Northeast doesn't really understand, you know, kind of the analytics behind it. Not saying it was the right decision or anything, but do you think Kapler would have ever worked here?
No. Yeah. So like, that's my, I've been saying this since, you know, he was almost fired. They were talking about firing. I'm like, dude, this guy might actually be a pretty good manager. Like, he's got a shot to be good. You know, you shouldn't fire him. You shouldn't fire him. But when they actually got to the time to make a decision, you know, and John Middleton's flying his plane all over the country, you know, doing his due diligence, which I still to this day don't really quite understand. It kind of became more evident to me that he had to go. It was not going to work here. Like, fans in this city weren't going to let it work. And that's not like to knock at the fans or poke at the fans, but like, he was not going to mesh in this town. Like, you know how he would have worked? The same way that Charlie Manuel worked. Like, it didn't at first. People made fun of him. He was different. And then his team was awesome and they didn't have time to bitch about him anymore. Like, Gabe Kapler needed to be bad in 18 and then 19 needed to be a World Series team. You know, I know Manuel was here, I guess, what, 2 years before they really started to turn the corner, which is more time than Kapler had. But I think that, like, Gabe had to win in 2019. Harper comes in. He's a fucking rock star. They win 97 games. He's got his aviators on. And I think people would have been like, yeah, he's different and weird, but, like, he's our weird, you know? Like,
yeah.
But when it didn't work that second year, people were like, I'm out. Screw this guy. You know, the WIP morning show caller type of person, like, was just going to be what, no matter what they did, no matter if they overperformed, like, and I would tell you that they overperformed both of those years, which I know, because they didn't make the playoffs, they didn't win, you know, they didn't finish 500. I get it, but I'm telling you, man, like, you could see, I thought that you could see he was a good manager, but I just didn't think it was going to work here. I was glad when he went to San Francisco. I thought it would work, maybe not to the extent that they won 107 games, but the guy can obviously manage. And the other thing that you have to kind of keep in mind, too, is, like, Gabe Kapler in Philly is not Gabe Kapler in San Francisco. You know, I think that he learned from his mistakes. Like, I think that he knows that he did things that he would like to have back here. So, you know, good for him. I thought he deserved it.
I've been fighting with people on Twitter the last couple days about it. So I was a Gabe Kapler guy when he was here. So this isn't even a question. This is me just throwing my opinion out there. But I do think that he's a better manager now than he was in Philadelphia. He absolutely learned things just like anyone would doing any job that you do. But I do think that there's a lot of Phillies fans out there that are kind of trying to excuse their feelings about him at the time by being like, oh, he must have learned from all his mistakes here because he sucked here. He won 81 games with this team that won 82 games last year, but he didn't have an MVP season from Harper. He didn't have a Cy Young season from Wheeler. He didn't have Ranger Suarez. He didn't have, like, even a couple other players, all these other pieces. It's a way better roster right now than the team that Gabe Kapler coached to 81 wins. And people love to bring up those late season collapses. In my opinion, it was a miracle that those awful rosters were even in the position to collapse in the late season. So maybe it wouldn't have worked here. Maybe he wouldn't have won 107 games here. Maybe he's not, you know, Charlie Manuel or Dallas Green, and they're a legend in the city. But I think he is a markedly better manager than Girardi. And I think this team probably wins 86 plus games this year with Kapler.
Yeah, I think that from a tactical standpoint, Gabe Kapler is probably a better manager than Joe Girardi. The only thing that I'd be willing to allow for in having that conversation comparing the two is that, you know, I don't think that Gabe fully had the clubhouse engaged while he was here. And I do think that Joe came in and had some instant credibility. And even some of the mistakes that he's made, I think that the players have been a little bit more like, yeah, but it's Joe Girardi. Whether or not that's warranted, whether or not they really should feel that way, I think is a totally different conversation. But you do kind of have to take into account, you know, where are your core players at in relation to how they feel about the manager? Because I do think that it matters. You know, Gabe goes out to San Francisco and they have the shortened season. It was a weird year. But I think that they were very skeptical of him at the start. In fact, I remember Johnny Cueto coming out and talking about it, saying, like, you know, I've got to get used to this. This is not what I'm – like, this is not cool. But I think, like, this year he came in and certain guys got off to good starts. They were feeling better. Guys that had been, you know, you're talking about Buster Posey and Brandon Belt and these guys that kind of looked like they were on the downturn, right? Brandon Crawford, Jesus. I mean,
Longoria
got MVP votes this year. somehow, which is crazy. But, like, you look at those guys and I think they get off to this hot start. They're feeling good about how things are being done. And all of a sudden, like, it was like, Gabe, you know, like, thanks, dude. Like, let's go. And I think that those positive vibes really early on in the year just kind of rolled. So, you know, it's funny. One thing I'll say, like, I have a really kind of like an outlandish take here. But like, if you look at the 2021 San Francisco Giants, like, good bullpen, they got really good starting pitching. But like, there was nobody on that team that you were like, oh, my God. Right. Like, and guys that were sort of on the on the downside, they had like this like little bit of like 93 Phillies magic to them where like they just got off to a crazy good start. Nobody saw it coming. And they just ran with it for 6 months, and it never ran out until, you know, obviously they get into the playoffs.
Minus the DUIs, I'm guessing, of the 93 Phillies.
Minus the DUIs and car crashes and, yeah, Lenny Dykstra.
Steroids, yeah.
Before we move off Lenny Dykstra, did you see the 86 Mets documentary?
Yeah.
Insane. Just watched it in the last couple of days. Lenny Dykstra, man, it is.
Yeah, Lenny is – I don't know. We tried to have Lenny on a podcast like 2 years ago. And he was like, I'm in. And I didn't even really want him on, but I was just like, he's accessible. It's a former player. We'll get some people that listen. He's on Twitter. And he was like, I'm in. Send me a limo. And I'm like, I'll drive down. I'm like, no, dude, like, I don't want you to drive down. We just want to do it like on Zoom or, you know, call in. We were actually in a studio at this point. We were like on 6:10 a.m. trying to like get him on air or like call in. He's like, no, nah, I'll come down. And I'm like, all right, never mind.
So when Nick Sirianni doesn't work out here and then he goes and takes,
yeah,
let's say the Jaguars or the Dolphins, and he takes them to 12 wins or 13 wins in 2 years. What are people going to say then?
So, someone got me on Twitter a few weeks ago. I was simultaneously criticizing Nick Sirianni and praising Gabe Kapler. And someone was like, I actually agree with you on both, but aren't you kind of doing to Nick Sirianni what you are upset that people did to Gabe Kapler? And I said, yeah. And then I thought about it a little bit more. And I said, okay, yeah, maybe. And I've since like changed my stance now that he's like Mr. Run the Ball. I'm like, maybe there is a chance for Nick. You know, maybe there is. But that Gannon guy, he's got to go. You know, like, I can step back and like I could do like the fair and balanced thing with the Phillies. I just turn into like every characteristic, every worst trait, and which may also be the best trait of Eagles fans. Like, I have them. Like, I have all of them. I'm nuts.
Ten years ago, if Kyle was doing those, Kyle was doing tailgate videos, Bob Wackel would have been a star.
Oh, yeah,
videos.
Yeah.
You would have found your way on there. I'll tell you that.
I'm the guy. Like, I have the classic Eagles cycle where, like, they, you know, Monday morning I wake up after a loss and I'm like, my friend said, you know, what do you think about this Denver game? I said, I don't care. I'm over it. I just want to see Jalen Hurts play well. I want to see Devontae Smith play well. I want to just see a little bit of improvement from young guys on defense. The score doesn't matter. By like the third quarter, I'm like, yo, like, you look at that 7 seed, like, you know, like, I'm like, oh man, you're looking at that 7 seed. They get the Saints this week. Like, they got the tiebreaker over Atlanta and Carolina. Like, they can do it. Like, and so that's where I've now worked my way into here. Like, by the third quarter of the game, after I was done with the season going in.
Oh, you're exactly right. I will always talk myself in by Wednesday that the Eagles are going to win on Sunday. I'm all in. I was all out against the Chargers, but now I'm like, let's get a playoff spot. Let's get these boys some playoff experience. Let's get Jalen some playoff experience. 3 first-rounders. Let's use them on the defense. Maybe replenish the line a little bit. Let's go all in. And I think Kamara's not practicing. I know they're down Ramchek.
Yeah,
I think they win this weekend.
Very banged up. I know. So Kamara's actually downgraded. So like, he was doing some stuff earlier in the week, and then yesterday they downgraded him. So I'm like, all right, here we go, right? Like, yeah, you know, I'm actually going to this game on Sunday. And
where are you tailgating?
I'm going with my father-in-law. So like, I don't know what kind of day we're trying to have. Yeah, I don't know if we want to do like the 4-hour tailgate going in.
How's he on the mic?
What's that?
How's your father-in-law on the mic?
I don't think he's gonna. I think would no comment. Yeah, I don't think he's he's not made for the mic, I don't think. But so I'm thinking to myself, like, 2 weeks ago, because we got him these tickets like 5-6 weeks ago. I got him the tickets. I said, take whoever you want. He turns around and says, do you want to go? And I was like, you know, yeah, I guess. Sure.
You sandbagger.
Yeah, but like, I really, at that point, they were so bad. I was like, I could do other things. Like, I could just sit here. I can have a couple beers at home. I don't need to drive down there, whatever. Like, I'm getting old, man. I'm 36. You know, it's hard to go to the stadium when you're 36. It's like a big investment. So, listen, I'm like, whatever. Like, we'll just go down there. We'll watch the game. I don't have to worry about them winning or losing. It doesn't matter. And now I'm like, yo, if they win this game, they're making the playoffs. The Giants twice, Washington twice, the Jets, and then you're going to get the Cowboys who are probably mailed in week 17. Like, that's 6-2 down the stretch, dude. Like, they're going 9-8. They're getting the seventh seed. Yeah. So I'll be all juiced up on Sunday. I want to see them win at home. I don't know if they will, but I'll tell you what. The thing, and you guys, I think, appreciate this probably more than anybody, the odds makers screw with you. Like, you wake up or you Sunday night, you open up an app and you're like, all right, like, so the Saints, pretty good. Sean Payton, they've lost 2 games in a row. Eagles aren't going to win this game. And then you see Eagles 1.5-point favorite and you're like, yo, they know. Odds makers know. Like, and so then you start to talk yourself into it. And they've kind of done that to the Eagles like the last 4 weeks. Like, that Chargers line, I was like, yo, like, this is kind of weird. Like, they're going to win this game, right? Same thing last week. It gets down to 1 by kickoff. I'm like, what is going on here? And here we are again.
They were favored by 3.5 against the Lions when everyone was in love with the Lions and thought the Lions were going to win. But you alluded to the Jalen Hurts dilemma and the point of this season. And his progression really is, with Sirianni, the two most important things going on with this Eagles team, regardless of record. So I've got a fun little Jalen Hurts name game to toss at you guys. Or would you rather? Because this was born not out of Jalen Hurts, actually. I was trying to figure out what number quarterback Mac Jones is in the NFL. Like, how many quarterbacks would I take above Mac Jones? I think there's 11 of the top quarterbacks right now, and they're very much ahead of everyone else. After that, I think there's a group of 6 names. Jalen Hurts is in that group, so I'm going to pitch a couple names at you guys.
Is this right now, like, go win a game Sunday, or is this moving
right
forward?
Now. Okay. Right now. Yeah, right now. Just, like, current player. Jalen Hurts or Mac Jones? Who's the better player? Would New England be worse with Hurts? Would Philadelphia be worse with Jones?
I had this exact conversation with a friend last night, like, this literal conversation. And, like, I would take Jones, but I have no conviction behind that whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm still waiting on McCorkle. But, yeah, let's go Mac Jones for right now.
Let's change the topic a little bit. Jalen Hurts or Kirk Cousins? Because I think you know what Kirk Cousins is right now. There's at least, like, a little hope that Jalen Hurts is continuing to improve. Would you want to lock yourself in at average with Kirk Cousins, or do you want to take the chance with Jalen Hurts?
It's kind of the same thing. Like, if I had to go win a game Sunday, like, I would, I guess, probably I hate Kirk Cousins. He's terrible. Like, I think that you're just signing up for mediocrity. If I had to win Sunday, like, I'd probably go Kirk Cousins, maybe. I don't know. I mean, look, moving forward, like, the rest of the year, over 8 games, I'd take Jalen Hurts. Next year, Jalen Hurts for sure.
I'm taking Kirk Cousins to win Sunday. If Jalen Hurts has a bad game Sunday, I don't want to be talked to on Monday. We might cancel the podcast on Monday.
Are you anti-Hurts?
No, I'm a big Hurts guy. He's so much fun to root for.
On the table, you're so upset.
I'd be so sad. Yeah. I like the Chargers game was big for me. I was like, let's see what we have.
Yeah.
And of course, it was like kind of right down the middle.
Yeah.
We can't just have a really bad, really good guy.
Now I've got the one that matters. Okay. This is the important one. And I think you guys know where this is going. Jalen Hurts or Carson Wentz? Who is better right now? Wentz's stats are pretty staggering when you look at them. I did not realize they were as good as they are.
I feel like I have to remove myself from this conversation. I detest Carson Wentz. Like, I hate Carson Wentz. Like, he's probably a very good guy, right? Like, and I have no idea what the hell happened last year. I don't know whose fault it was. I don't know if he was a brat or if, like, I have no idea. I have no clue.
I would suggest, and no free ads, but Ryan Russillo just interviewed Doug Peterson on his podcast, and he gave some credence to the whole they built a statue and it ruined Carson Wentz thing. He brought up the statue, not Russillo, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect that was the case. I'm going down with Hurts, damn it. Like, I'm going on Hurts. I just can't do it. You know, the one thing I'll say, like, you look at the, like, the arm talent and all that crap, right? Like, yeah, as Wentz obviously has a little bit more upside there. But, like, inevitably, like, let's see him. Like, I hate being this guy because that makes me such a hater. But, like, let's go back and look at the Colts' schedule this year. Roll through some of those elite teams that he's played against. You know, like, oh, man, he lit up the Jags. In fact, they couldn't even put away the Jags last week. You know, Taylor comes out. They're running the ball down their throat. They look like they're going to win by 35 points. And there they are in the fourth quarter with 21 on the board, hanging on for dear life at home against a terrible Jacksonville team. I just don't see it with him, man. Like, I think he's going to have stretches where he puts up those numbers and then he lets you down or gets hurt or I'm just out on him. I'm out. And then I look at Hurts and I know you talk about accuracy, anticipation, bailing from the pocket, all of these things that he struggles with. But I do see a guy who's getting better, which like can happen for a 23-year-old athlete, which nobody's willing to accept here. And I look at everything I dislike about Carson Wentz, I like about Jalen Hurts. Like, he's easy to root for. He seems like a leader. He seems like the kind of dude the guys in the locker room would be like, yo, that's our fucking dude. Like, let's go win a football game. And I don't think that Wentz inspires that type of confidence.
No, the best thing about Hurts compared to Wentz, and there's obviously been the talk of the 14 games out there, and the numbers are pretty similar. It's honestly pretty favorable to Hurts. But the thing about Wentz is, and you talked about it there, it's like, I don't know what happened, and there's probably some mental stuff there, and there's probably some behind-the-ear stuff. With Jalen Hurts, if Jalen Hurts doesn't work out at quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, it's not because of anything in his makeup. It's not because of anything in his brain, anything between the ears. He has it all, like, in terms of intangibly to be the guy at quarterback. If he's not the guy, then it's because he's not a good enough quarterback, and I can live with that. But with Carson Wentz, it's because of that between the ear kind of thing you can't factor for.
You know, it's bizarre. Like, beginning of the year, like, they kept doing that dog mentality thing. And, like, it's very easy to, like, just be like, dude, shut up with this, right? But I actually think that player specifically, I think a lot of guys just say it to say it. I honestly think that that player specifically sort of has that, where he's like, I made a bad throw. Let's get the next one. Like, he really does kind of seem to show that. But what I do want to see, like, you're talking, Kyle, about, like, the Chargers game being a big game for you. I do want to see, and I know the game flow last week sort of prevented this from happening, but, like, I want to see a good first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. Start to finish where you're just like, dude, that was a complete game. And last week, I mean, would they throw it three times in the second half? The game didn't, you know, call for 15 pass attempts in the second half, but I would like to see him just start to finish, put it on a team. That I would like to see.
This Wentz season feels very 2019 Wentzian.
That's fair.
Yeah. They're not, his numbers are good. I mean, his numbers are good. You know, it's hard to argue with them, but you just see, you just kind of look at that team and what do they have the next couple weeks? I think that they have the Bills and the Patriots. I want to say that the Colts do, so they finally got themselves back to 500. Like, let's see it now. Like, you know, go beat the Patriots, go beat the Bills, and then, like, then 2 weeks from now we can talk. But yeah, you know, you look at how they've gotten to 5-5, and I mean, now in hindsight, like, the game in San Francisco that they win in the rain, like, that's a pretty good win. I know that he wasn't great in that game. The weather was just god awful. But, like, other than that game, like, what are you looking at with the Colts this year? Go, wow, really, really impressive stuff.
The most impressive Colts game was the game they lost to the Ravens when they got up big and then they ended up giving up the lead. That was probably their most impressive game.
You're going to find a lot out about Carson Wentz the next 5 weeks. Listen to the schedule. Bills, Bucks, Texans, Patriots, Cardinals.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of
that's the way. I mean, so, and honestly, like, that's where, like, you, if you're an Eagles fan, you're rooting for him to play, but for them not to win, like, you couldn't have it both ways. Like, I don't think that they would have benched him, like, or I don't know that, I guess, but I suspect that they would not have benched him, but they needed to be 5-5 at this point, or at least hanging around where, you know, he's going to play the next 3 weeks to get him over that threshold so that you get that pick. If they were 2-8 right now, I do think, like, you would, if they were 2-8 right now, that means he was god awful, just terrible. And then do you really say, like, yeah, we're gonna forfeit a first round pick so that we don't hurt your feelings? Like, there had to be some type of balance, and this 5-5 with that schedule, I think, is the perfect outcome for the Eagles.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they could have also gotten out of his contract next year after next season. So it kind of would have been like, if we did,
they had to win some games. He had to show something for this to work.
Yeah. How you feeling about Sunday? Did they win?
Yeah. I mean, if Kamara's out, I mean, that would, you can't underestimate that. I mean, you watched that game a couple weeks ago, Monday Night Football, when they were up in Seattle. And I mean, they had nothing. I mean, the Saints couldn't do anything. The whole offense was Kamara. And I kind of think that that's where they're at going into this weekend. And if he doesn't play, I know the Saints are like this perennial contender and Sean Payton's a great coach. And you can kind of talk yourself into like Nick Sirianni, Sean Payton, like, what are we talking about here? Eagles haven't been good at home, but yeah, if I had to bet it right now, I'd take the Eagles.
Yeah, I think that I agree. And I think Jalen Hurts beat a better Saints team last year. I think that defense was better. I think the team was better. They had a better quarterback. I mean, I know they were using Drew Brees and some of Taysom Hill at the time. But I think you can handicap the Eagles based on the quarterbacks they play. And they've lost to Dak, Herbert, Carr, Mahomes, and Brady. And they've beaten Matt Ryan, Teddy Bridgewater, Jared Goff, and Sam Darnold. I think Trevor Siemian falls more in line with that second list of names. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in. And then what do they have next week? Is that when they dip into the NFC East, right? They come in. Is it the Giants next week? Or
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it's Giants next week. Giants, Jets, Washington, Giants, Washington, Cowboys to finish it out.
I mean, it's you just sit back. It's hard not to see, 11-6.
I mean, the best quarterback they're about to play is the Heinie King.
Yeah, I know. It's they've definitely got, even with a win on Sunday, you know, they have one or two just absolute, like, what the hell was that? And like, you know, that they're splitting with the Giants. Like, you know, they're not running the table against Washington and New York.
I'll broaden this out real quick from the Eagles. Do you have any hot takes across the NFL right now? Non-Eagles hot takes, maybe a gambling take, maybe a future. Mine is the Patriots winning the AFC.
Maybe a Brandon Staley take.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Staley, like, so again, like, here's my thing. Like, what have the Chargers done this year that has anointed him as the next great coach in the NFL? Which, by the way, like, 4 years from now, we could play this and like, he's got a Super Bowl, he's won three division titles, he unseats the Chiefs. Entirely possible. My only thing is, like, I feel like that sometimes football media especially does this. They latch on to something and they kick it up and then they just decide, like, this is a thing now. Like, this is it. And like, why is that? Because he gave a couple thoughtful press conferences that he's good with his answers, that he's willing to elaborate on things. They won a couple games early on. Okay. But what are they right now through 9 weeks? So they're 5-4. He's got Justin Herbert, who's top 7 quarterback in the NFL. Like, it's the same thing with them. They go out to Baltimore and they get absolutely ripped apart. He's a defensive guy. Their defense isn't very good. Again, like, could be a good coach. He's had a fine season. I just don't know why that we've decided that he's the next thing when a guy like, I actually won't even use Sirianni as a comparison, but like, they're not that far apart in terms of win loss, right? Like, it's not that much of a disparity. So how have we already just decided through 2.5 months, these are the career paths moving forward? And that's what I find to be, it's not about Brandon Staley. It's about the way that media and the way that I guess us, like, we just decide something and we make it a thing. And I just don't get it.
I think the reason Mahomes. That people, oh my God, Kyle thinks Mahomes is bad at football, and it's just like, I have to deal with this every podcast now. And
I don't think Mahomes is bad at football.
Things I've ever heard in my life that anyone's
I just
ever
don't
said.
Like the marketing machine to be shoved down my throat all the time.
Yeah, he's number one in passing yards, number one in touchdowns, and they're 6-4 after everyone freaking out. He's really getting shoved down our throats. But going back to the Chargers, I think Brandon Staley is being treated the way he is because the worst head coach in NFL history last year was their coach, and Anthony Lynn. And I think that there's a lot of NFL media that are like, wait a second, you can put together sentences at the podium and you don't like forget how many timeouts you have? Like, oh my God, it's completely different now. But I think that it's a little bit like how the Sixers fans treated Doc Rivers like he was Greg Popovich last year because they hated Brett Brown. So I think that a lot of the Brandon Staley thing has to do with who he's replacing. I think he's about as average as you can get as a head coach right now.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I mean, like I said, jury's out. Maybe he does it. Not so much a take, but an observation. When is a favorite going to cover a Monday night football game? Is it going to happen? I'm like a big like guy that walks up to a blackjack table and sees like red hit 11 times. I'm like, it has to be black eventually. And it's not. And I kind of feel that way with Monday night football. And last week I didn't like the line. I stayed off. I was like, I'm out. This is like a little bit short. Rams off a really bad loss. It's only 3.5. Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, what are we talking about here? So I said, I'm out. Nothing for me on this game. And then the 49ers just go out and they toast them. And I'm just like I'm like a fan of like eventually, like I want to bet on a favorite on Monday night. It's got to happen eventually. When is it going to happen? That's the thing that I mean, like that's my degenerate gambling brain in the way that I view things.
You lay in 11.5 with Tampa this week against the Giants?
Ooh, off of a rough game at Washington. Actually, didn't New York and Tampa play last year and kind of keep things – didn't they, like, New York sort of keep it close for a while?
I think so, yeah.
Giants might be looking at a 20-point loss on Monday night. We'll see. I don't know. I'll have to get to that, cross that bridge when we get there.
Can we do away with Thursday Night Football? It's atrocious.
I mean, I hate the product, but I love the – if you could give me, like, rested players that didn't hate doing it, I would love it. It's – dude, it's like the gateway to the weekend. You're like, fuck, football's on. Let's do it. I don't have to watch Duke, you know?
So if I gave you this where it was like week one, we have Thursday night football, and then we don't have Thursday night football again until like week four, but you get bye teams every week. So you get guys on 10 days rest.
So
but you like, have to kind of like concede
you get
a couple
it,
weeks.
Like, once a month, basically, like you – or you just have to
– I think you get it.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
You get like week one and then weeks like 4 through 14 or 13, however long buys go.
I can do that, I guess. I could live with that.
Yeah.
I like Thursday night football, though. I actually have come to like Thursday night football more than Monday night football. And I think part of that is just the production of it. Like, I hate Monday night football's production. Like, I still don't think they have the booth right. Like, I think it's better than it was with Joe Tessitore.
Why don't you watch the Manning cast?
Well, actually, I'll tell you what. The reason why I don't usually watch the Manning cast is I go out on Monday nights with my, like, buddies. Like, we go out every Monday night to watch Monday Night Football. And, like, Manning cast just doesn't play as well, like, a bar or, you know, when you're sitting around talking and stuff. You kind of just want the background noise of the game.
Are we talking Jug Handle? Are we talking PJ Willihans? Are we talking
– actually, we take it all over the place. So, we're all Jersey guys. So, we go over into the city occasionally. But, yeah, usually, like, a PJ's. Skeeters down here in Blackwood in South Jersey. We'll do a Cinder Bar if we're feeling, you know, like we want to spend $50 for pizza and 3 beers. Try to mix it up a little bit. But yeah, so anyway, that's why I don't do Manning cast. And, you know, I just, there's something cheap about it. Like, I know you guys are younger and all that stuff, but like, I remember like back in the day, like Monday Night Football was the thing. Like, even as late as the early 2000s, it was still the thing when it was on ABC. I feel like the moment they switched it to ESPN, for whatever reason, it's the same company. Like, it's the same graphics packages, but like, it just doesn't feel as important to me anymore. And maybe that's because Sunday night is what it is now, but.
Well, the NFL kind of fucked them too with the schedule and everything. And they were kind of like, okay, you're going to report negatively on us. Here's your Monday Night Football schedule.
Yeah, they definitely did. I think, if I'm not mistaken, next year they're actually going to have a flex opportunity on Monday night now, once they get to the middle of the year. So maybe that'll help. I mean, there are just so many garbage matchups where you're like, okay, what do we got this week? Like, how are we wrapping up the week? And you see Giants, Bucks, you know, and unless your fantasy team's within 7 points of a win or you've got $200 on the game, who cares, you know? And that's, I think, a big problem. But I just find something like cheap about the way it's done. I don't know.
Once Al Michaels and John Madden went to Sunday Night Football, it really changed the whole dynamic. And also, I'll say it, the moment that killed Monday Night Football was the semi-pornographic Terrell Owens pregame moment. That might have killed off Monday Night Football.
Dangerous Housewives or whatever. Housewives. Yeah. T.O. pre-Cowboys game, 04. I was a freshman in college watching that in my dorm room going, what the hell is this?
I was 7. And I was going, what the hell is this?
That's awesome.
Oh, man. All right, Mark, you got anything else before we let Bob Wankel go?
Are the Cowboys winning the Super Bowl this year?
No. Kyle, yes. Me, no. Kyle's the biggest Cowboys fan in the entire country, actually. Kyle really loves Dak Prescott. He thinks he's got like a – he thinks he's really handsome. He really likes the way he dresses and comes to games. He's really into the Mike McCarthy gimmick. He really likes watermelons.
No, I'm a big – I like Dak. I have no problem with Amari Cooper. I have no problem with CD. I have no problem with Micah Parsons. I don't like Mike McCarthy. I don't like – I didn't get the Zeke. I don't like Zeke. But I think this is a kind of a likable Cowboys team, and I don't really have like this vitriol for him. So it's like
okay. I guess I can go for that. I think it's social media. It's like the people that I know in my social circles who root for the Cowboys. It'll just always make me. That's enough.
See, I never had a Cowboys fan in my life. Really, I had a Pittsburgh Steelers fan in my life growing up, and I think I've always had a disdain for the Pittsburgh Steelers because of him. And it was just like, no matter what, the Pittsburgh Steelers could go 8-8, and they were still like world beaters.
I went to Monmouth, and so we were in Central Jersey, and a lot of Giants fans. And so, like, when I got to college, I hated the Giants more than I hated the Cowboys. But I don't know, man. Like, it's always nice to kind of say, like, yeah, you haven't won a Super Bowl since you were 10 years old, like all that type of stuff. Or I'm getting a little nervous watching the Rams on Monday night. I'm like, oh no, like it's going to be Aaron Rodgers' vaccination status versus the Dallas Cowboys in the path to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. So
I still think LA, Green Bay, Tampa Bay are the top three. I know LA and Tampa Bay don't look it right now. I still think they'll figure it out. Maybe it's the Kingsbury, Mike McCarthy of it all. I just can't see Arizona and Dallas like on that next level. If they were in the AFC, I think they could win the AFC. But I really think that that top of the NFC is going to end up.
Yeah, if you're desperate to see the Cowboys not win or even get to the Super Bowl, because to me, like, that's just as bad. Like, I don't want the 2-week run-up of Cowboys Super Bowl. You got to hope that there's that moment in the divisional round of the NFC playoffs where Mike McCarthy has to do something that's fairly obvious in an important situation, and he just completely, you know, craps his pants.
He's kicking a field goal down 4 on like the 30.
A mojo moment?
Yeah, a mojo moment. He does what happened to Green Bay last year, right? Where they're coming down and they hit 3 and never see the ball again, and that's the game. Like, that's what he does.
Yeah. All right, that's Bob Wankel. Go read him at Crossing Broad. Next time you'll see him, it'll be February.
Yeah, read me in Crossing Broad in February. That's when I'll be back. Until then, I'm running gambling ads across a vast network of different sports sites.
Hey, everyone plays their role.
I didn't ask it when we talked about it. Are you rooting for the work stoppage? Are you like, hey, you know, shortened season?
I love baseball. Like right around mid-February, I get the itch. And then we're back into it. So until then, we're going to be talking about salary floors. It's hard to be like a baseball guy right now. Like the players are making 6% less now than they were in 2018. And that's why lawyers are in a room arguing over this. And there's only 12 teams trying to win the World Series. And I'm out on that stuff. I hate it. I like baseball. I like to talk about what I see on the field.
I was going to make a joke about 2 DHs, but that obviously doesn't make any sense because I feel like the Phillies have like 7 DHs on their team.
They do. Reese Hoskins, Kyle Schwarber,
JT Romuto.
An Asian catcher, yeah.
Asian catcher, Didi
Harper Gregorius. In 5 years.
One of Didi Gregorius.
I have a Phillies question. I got a DM from someone who might be in the know, and I'm saying that they're 100% accurate. Minnesota wants Bohm for Buxton. We doing it?
I would do that deal.
100%.
Yeah, I would do that deal. You're going to have to pay on the back end of it, but I would do that deal. That's like a organization game changer. You talk about like premium athlete, high upside, can't stay on the field, but I would roll the dice there and take that shot for sure.
This could be a bad Bohm year. This could be a real bad. I could see him being the one everyone zeroes in on this season.
Oh, if he's in starting line. He's their third baseman this year, and like they're in win now mode, and they've gone out and made tweaks to this roster to like actually make it a legit competitor. And Alec Bohm kicking balls down a third base and hitting one home run every 30 games. Like, yeah, it's gonna be a tough year for him. A lot of pressure on him if he's here.
They need to sell him before any value's gone.
And on that note, we'll see you in March.
All right, thanks to Bob Wankel for coming on. Let's switch it over. Ben Simmons is going to get St. Joe's the death penalty. Did you see this?
No, I knew that he's practicing there, but what's the allegation?
So according to, now take this with a grain of salt. You're not going to like who I'm about to pull up onto the screen.
Yeah.
But Howard Eskin first reported that he was practicing with St. Joe's, which came true. But now it turns out that the situation with Ben Simmons and Sixers, hashtag NBA, is disgraceful. But Simmons may now have created an issue for St. Joe's basketball. I reported he at times is working out and scrimmaging with St. Joe's team, that I'm also told by someone in NCAA, at NCAA, hashtag NCAA, that may be an NCAA rules violation. Jesus Christ, Howard, how many times you put NCAA in that last sentence? This is great. Because I visualize in my head just the ruling coming down from the NCAA, and the St. Joe's Hawk is in the courtroom, and he's flapping his wings, and he slowly, they just get weaker and weaker and weaker until they come to a complete stop, and they give St. Joe's the death penalty, and the Hawk, the Hawk is finally dead.
Man, yeah, that would be that'd be a dark day for some on Hawk Hill.
I mean, hang your banner up for 2004 and what else? They have like an NIT championship, I think, or an NIT finalist. It's like, hasn't really that been that storied of a university since Jameer Nelson, Delonte West, and that one white guy walked through the doors.
Let's not talk about Delonte West right now. There's some rough stuff on Twitter. But I will say that it is like, it's staggering the amount that St. Joe's has fell since I was a child. When I was a child, St. Joe's was the number one basketball school in Philadelphia, probably like just edging out Villanova. I know Temple was better back then as well, so they were probably closer to Villanova and to the top of Philly basketball. But St. Joe's has been just putrid for years now. I mean, at the end of the Martelli era, what's the guy's name? He came from the Sixers.
Lang.
Yeah. They've been terrible as of late. So my main takeaway is like, what is Ben Simmons gaining by practicing at St. Joe's practice that he wouldn't by going to like LA Fitness?
This move.
Is the run at LA Fitness that much worse than the run at St. Joe's like practice though?
Jesus, man. Hey, there's a kid averaging 19 on St. Joe's right now. That I think his last name is like Tucker or something like that. Yeah, the run at LA Fitness is a lot worse than the run at St. Joe's.
LA Fitness?
Yeah. The runs are, I don't know, I'd rather have runs in my shorts than runs at LA sometimes. So I actually kind of like this move. Because like when I was growing up and I would have like a bad CYO game, I was always the tallest in like the neighborhood out of all my neighborhood friends and whatnot. Did you ever like lower the hoop in your driveway?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's the best. You dunk contest and you feel like a million bucks. Like when I was having a bad CYO game, it was like, hey, let's get all the neighborhood friends together, come over to the driveway, or we'll go over to your driveway, lower the hoop, and I would just dunk on everybody. And it just immediately like made my confidence grow. So I kind of like this in a way where it's like, hey, maybe this is for Ben's confidence. Go out there, go dunk city on a couple of D1 kids. I mean, think about it. Everyone's beating up on the Rockets right now in the NBA. Lou Dort just went for 34. Now he's got the Bucks tonight. He'll probably drop 30. It's a get right game. It's a get right practice.
You know, is Billy Lang being like their coach, is that why you think? Like, is he friends with Ben?
It has to be. It has to be, because he was there under the prep. He was there for 6 years. It's not because they're the best basketball team in the city, I'll tell you that.
Jay Wright said, we're good. stay away.
So this is what actually I have this question, Mark, and I think you'd enjoy this. Could St. Joe's and Ben Simmons beat Nova?
No.
See, I don't think so either. Could you handicap it for me, you think?
Nova by one. It would be close. It'd be close.
I like Nova by 4.5. Given 4.5.
That's a lot of points.
The Nova, fourth in the nation in three-point percentage. St. Joe's, 355th in the nation in opponents' three-point percentage. I think that's where you lose the game right there. I think Jay Wright could just game plan against Ben stick Jermaine Samuels on him, maybe throw Eric Dixon at him a little bit, rough him up a little bit, or just go 2-3 zone and pack it in and make him score.
You see Colin Gillespie out there against UCLA just like digging his shoulder in the chest. Ugh. Colin Gillespie might be a dirty player. I never thought that before watching that UCLA game, but he had one play where he did like the, you know, the standard like back into the paint. It might have been a foul, but the guy like went back and then came back up on him and put his you know chest right up against his back. And Gillespie's like, really? You're coming back after that? And the second one that he threw, it looked like he was gonna like put his elbow through his chest and like send him into the stands. He got called for it. But like, it was just, it seemed like he was mad at the audacity of someone to come back and play defense after he backed him down.
Listen, that's a Philadelphia Catholic League guard out of Archbishop Wood. Okay. You go down to West Catholic on a Tuesday night and you're getting out of there at 10 o'clock. You're playing those West Catholic boys. You're playing Newman Goretti. You're playing Roman. You're playing Monsignor Bonner. You're going to get some tough dudes where you have to throw a couple bows into chest. Let them know what they're in for today.
Yeah. Where's he from?
Archbishop Wood.
Archbishop Wood. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, was that Ryan one?
No, that was Penn Charter. I fouled out in one half one time at Newman Goretti.
That's heart right there. That's grit.
Yeah. I had 5 fouls in one half one time. I don't know if you know anything about Newman Goretti, but they're like a powerhouse, like high school basketball team, consistently D1 guys, consistently state champions. We were down like 20 and I was basically inserted as a goon.
Wait, you played against Newman Goretti?
Yeah, I played against Newman Goretti.
Who'd you play? What high school did you go to?
Lansdale Catholic.
If you want to dox yourself?
I can dox myself. Lansdale Catholic.
All right. I've heard of it.
Yeah. So I was basically thrown in there junior year, I forget what it was. Basically thrown in there as a goon and the rest is history. Fouled out first half. The Newman Goretti fans did not like me. The team actually had to circle around me as we were walking to the buses. I never felt in danger. Supposedly I was in danger.
I'm sorry. People are still angrily tweeting at me about Nikola Jokic having an amazing game last night. So I think it's time to segue into that.
Talk about it.
I'm mad, folks. I'm angry. I'm mad online. I'm mad in real life. The Hoop Central, I mean, we'll start off with this. The Hoop Central, you know, there's plenty of NBA Twitter accounts out there that'll just tweet out a stat line after a game if a player has a good stat line. And they tweeted out, Nikola Jokic, 30 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 turnover. They lost the game by 30 to the Sixers, who didn't have Joel, who don't have Ben Simmons, who didn't have Danny Green, who don't have Matisse Thybulle. That's a joke. If you're the Denver Nuggets and you have the MVP on your team, you should be beating teams when they're down 4 of their top 7 minute getters from a 1 seed the year before. Nikola Jokic is the biggest fraud in sports, and people just like to watch his fancy highlights and his fancy passes. He makes a nice pass, and then, you know, because he's a fat ass, he can't get his ass back up the court to play defense, so he has to get a take foul on a fast break. But, hey, he had a really nice fancy pass there. Well, guess what? He was a minus last night. And the reason he was a minus was Charles fucking Bassey, a second-round rookie out of Western Kentucky who hadn't played in the NBA yet. And it's not like he's putting up insane numbers in the G League either. And he comes in and has a breakout, like 14 points, a couple blocks, a couple steals, a bunch of rebounds, performance, a tip dunk over Jokic. Charles Bassey, a second-rounder, made Nikola Jokic look like an idiot in the second half. Nikola Jokic came in the first 15, 16 minutes of this game. He had 27 points. He had 8 rebounds. He had 5 assists. What a game. It seemed like he might drop 60. He had as many field goals made as Joel Embiid, who didn't play in the game in the second half. He had 0 field goals made. He had 3 points in the second half. And, you know, it's funny to see that considering a big Denver, you know, what I guess it'd be like the Liberty Line of Philadelphia for Denver, whatever their podcast account is, looking like Embiid is ducking Jokic with COVID was a tweet that went a little viral before the game. You want to know what Embiid's record is against Nikola Jokic?
Tell us.
5-1. He's 5-1. And the one he lost was Jokic hitting a game winner. I was at a wedding, actually. And we were up huge in that game. We gave up a lead and we lost that game. But that's the one loss. That's one loss. We're also 6-4 against the Nuggets in our last 10 games. So the whole like, oh, Jokic owns Embiid and oh, Embiid is ducking Jokic thing. Yeah, Embiid injected himself with COVID 11 days ago because he thought that the Denver Nuggets looking mighty scary on that schedule 11 days away. Embiid wanted to, you know, inject himself with the disease. And it's really classy for Denver fans. Very liberal area, by the way. Some of my own liberal snowflake brethren, Denver down there, Colorado. And it seems like they're not being very sensitive towards COVID. Very weird to me. Because this guy, one of these guys that's tweeting at me, if you click on their Twitter, and you go to their Twitter, MAGA, like, fuck MAGA, fuck Donald Trump, fuck all this stuff. And it's like, oh, it's a little bit weird to be doing that and then saying, using COVID as and be ducking Jokic. Interesting to me. It's just, I think the Nuggets fans are some of the worst in sports. And every time you ever tweet anything about Jokic or ever see anything about Jokic on the timeline, there are these sycophants. That it's not about Embiid. This post isn't about Embiid. It's about Jokic. Every post about Jokic, there are sycophants that are saying Jokic is better than Embiid and how bad Embiid is and how Embiid can't stay healthy and Embiid's never going to win anything, as if Jokic is, you know, one has a full trophy case or something like that. But they are some of the worst fans in sports, and it's not something you'd think. Denver, the Nuggets, who gives a shit about the Nuggets? No one 5 years ago. But it's just like, I'm convinced that the people who think Jokic is the best player in the NBA and is the best center in the NBA don't actually watch basketball. It's just like the people tweeting that account out last night, his stat line. You didn't watch the game if you tweeted out his stat line. He had 27 in the first 20 minutes. He did nothing for the rest of the game, and he lost by 30. It's a joke. The fact that Embiid didn't win MVP last year is a joke. And the fact that anyone thinks Nikola Jokic is better than Joel Embiid at basketball is a joke.
Nikola Jokic probably deserved to win MVP last year.
I don't think so.
The best ability is availability.
Joel scored more, he rebounded more, and he's an actual defender. Nikola Jokic doesn't play defense.
It's also like 1,500 minutes like that separates them playing.
They won the same amount of games. Actually, we won more.
In a tougher West.
I mean, the winning percentage, you can use the West. We play the West teams too twice a year. We only play
not as much as they play, no.
Not that much more. Besides the division teams, it's about the same.
How's the Denver division? I'm trying to, off the top of my head, I can't even think.
I know it has Minnesota in it. It has Utah in it.
Number one seed?
Yeah, I don't know. If you want to get me angry, we can do this. But like, I don't know what else to say. I let out everything I had. Nikola Jokic is a complete fraud who's never going to win a title as the best player. And if he was going to, it would have happened already.
You really hate Jokic.
Oh, I hate his guts.
It's not about him.
It's not about him. It's
about Jokic. He's just a fat guy. He looks like he's just ripped cigs and has these crazy brothers who are just would fight anybody at the drop of the hat.
He was calling for those brothers when Charles Bassey was backing his ass down last night. Couldn't get any help out there in the second half. Help me, brothers. Someone's being mean to me.
I mean, that's second rounder on second rounder crime.
Make a Twitter account, brothers. Please tweet at the Morris brothers, please. While I attack them from behind and shove them to the ground because they take fouled me, which I do 3 times a game. That's why it is. Nikola Jokic took that foul so wrong because he's like, oh, I can't get back on fast breaks half the time. I do take fouls all the time. I know how to do them soft. That's why he got so upset. He's like, I'm an expert at take fouls because I have to do them every game because I'm a fat ass who's lazy on defense and doesn't actually play defense. So he's an expert on take fouls. So I can understand where he's coming from.
The Nuggets should be so much better. Look at their record right now. They're 9-6 now. They're sixth in the West. I know that Jamal Murray is not back, but like Aaron Gordon, 9 points, 31 minutes. Jeff Green's playing 23. Will Barton's playing 34. That guy won't die. Will Barton is a cockroach, man. He's good. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, 19, 34 minutes, 9 rebounds and whatnot. I feel like Will Barton's been in the league for like 20 years.
That's got to be a career high for him to be averaging 19. But MPJ has been out as well, Michael Porter Jr. So I'm actually going to make excuses for Jokic here. It's actually pretty impressive that they're 9-6 because with no Jamal and MPJ. But
do you think Austin Rivers and Doc talked after the game?
Is he still on Denver, Austin?
Yeah, he played 20 minutes last night.
That's funny because I watched the game and at no point was I like, oh, Austin Rivers.
It's never good for a player.
Yeah. And Austin Rivers is someone I know well. Like if I saw Austin Rivers and I mean, I watched it from like the patio most of the game, but
sometimes Tobias Harris is like that where it's like, oh, Tobias Harris played 25 minutes last night. I don't even remember.
By the way, another game. Another stat line where Tobias Harris is more negative than Georges Niang. He was a plus six, but Niang was like a plus 20 something. not that plus minus is everything again, but it is funny that the team is just usually worse when Tobias Harris is playing basketball.
You ready to go up on Andre Drummond yet?
No, I think Doc's about to. No, I don't think he is either. I think he's feeling the same way as I am, though. Andre Drummond cannot be playing starter minutes, and he can't be out there consistently. He's a bench guy and he's a bench energy guy, if anything. So I think that when you're seeing him play these expanded minutes, you're seeing him be able to utilize his role less, and his role is a hustle guy. He's a rebounder and like a grunt guy. So I think when he's out there more, you try to feel like you're getting yourself in a rhythm more and maybe being a little bit more passive underneath. But yeah, Bassey, I mean, if Bassey's that good every night, then Andre Drummond, I don't want to play any minutes. Because, I mean, if Bassey can be the version of the guy he was last night, where he's, you know, a great pick and roll option on offense, mm-hmm. he's blocking shots at the rim, he's intimidating, he's backing down guys. If he can do all that stuff, he's better than Drummond. I mean, that's end of conversation. I'm a little skeptical that, you know, that Charles Bassey thing is real. Same thing with Paul Reed. Anytime Paul Reed has a big game, I'm always skeptical with G leaguers and second rounders. I always kind of struggle being like, oh yeah, they will do this. Like a lot of Sixers fans do. But hey, he looked great last night. And there are people that are high on him. Daryl seems high on him every time he talks about him. So, it's funny.
He's very undersized though. He's only 6'9", 230.
Yeah. And that's probably why that's a big part of why he kind of got ignored in the draft process. He was a good player at Western Kentucky. I mean, he made things happen for sure. Let me pull up a tweet here from someone we know quite well in Philadelphia. I'm struggling. Kyle said it before. I don't think I've ever said this line before, but if you're a producer out there and you're listening to this, we got people beeping at Kyle outside.
What the fuck is that? You pay all this money to live in this damn city and people are just loud as shit.
At least we know Daryl Morey's on top of things here. Andre Drummond has to be one of the youngest players of all time to 9,000 rebounds. This was his reaction to last night's game. If you ever wanted to know like how much of a nerd Daryl Morey is and how much of everything in his life is driven by numbers, he watched last night's game and his first tweet after the game was, huh, Drummond got 9,000 rebounds. He's got to be the youngest player to ever do that. Like, I just thought that was funny. Like, you have all this reports dropping of the 30 players that he would trade for Ben Simmons and the Jeremy Grant report, which has been refuted really strongly, by the way.
Has it really already?
Really, really strongly.
Shout out, Keith. Lock in.
There are all these reports about, like, Daryl Morey's interest last night. And then I'm just scrolling the timeline and I see Andre Drummond, 9,000 rebounds. What do you guys think? It's like, got the pulse of the city right there, Daryl.
Wait, where did you see it refuted?
I know a couple Sixers writers who asked Sixers PR, and they categorically denied it off the record.
I mean, they...
No. They don't categorically deny things when there's any... They'll just say no comment, or they'll say, like, you know...
What takes a deny to a categorically deny?
I think it's Dave Schaller, whoever runs PR for the Sixers, answering the phone and being like, are you fucking kidding me?
Okay. Thank God.
Jeremy Grant's bad. I mean, I like Jeremy Grant. He's a process legend.
Oh, it's a gold medalist you're talking about right there.
He's gotten way worse defensively. His thing is that he's like supposed to be a defender who can kind of defend threes, fours, and maybe small fives. And we used him that way when he was here. He was a four, a small ball five at times. But his defense has gotten worse as people have convinced him that he's a scorer.
The offense has gotten to his head.
Yeah. I think it has. And the offense is pretty empty. He shoots like 42%. Like, it's not like an efficient 20 points per game. And I don't know. I like Sadiq Bey a lot. Like, I'm a Nova guy, obviously. I think he's the power forward version of McCall. Like, I think he's basically that level of player, or at least is going to be that level of player. And I think Kelly Olynyk, by the way, would be the perfect backup center, especially last season with Ben Simmons. on this team, but it's not enough. It's not anywhere near enough. The only thing that makes you think is like, does Daryl view that unprotected pick from Detroit as like gold? And he thinks like, oh, you can take these guys and I'll flip Bay, Maxey, Batiste, and that pick into something I couldn't flip Ben for. Maybe, maybe that. And Jake Fisher kind of alluded to that when we interviewed him about the Aaron Fox. So maybe Daryl's looking at things as like, oh, I'll trade for this to trade for that.
And a step, yeah,
for sure. And we don't know. We don't know yet. But I will say, they categorically denied that report as soon as it was out there, for sure. And I it seemed like something that Keith was making up, in my opinion.
They also said young player, and I did not hear Cade Cunningham's off the table.
Clutch Cade. Wait. Do you like Clutch Cade or Cade Clutchingham as his nickname? Which one are you going with?
I don't like either of them, honestly.
Or Cade Cunning Clutch.
Jesus Christ, these are getting worse.
I like Cade Clutchingham.
Nah, you can do too much with Cade.
Huh?
Like you can rhyme too much with Cade. There's got to be better nicknames than that. Is this you doing this, or is this NBA Twitter?
This is an NBA Twitter thing, arguing Thank whether God. This Cade Clutch or Cade Clutch or Clutch Cade or Cade Clutchingham. I think there's something to Cade Clutchingham. I think there's something there. I don't know what it is.
You mentioned Sam Amick's article talking about there's a list of 30 players that the Sixers have, with 5 of 10 of them becoming available in the next year or two. Can I yell some players out to you and you say yes or no if they're on the list or not? For, I guess, Ben?
I guess, like, before we get there, is, like, Giannis on this list?
Yeah, that's like, where do you separate it from, like, you know, just laughable to, yeah, like, LeBron James? Like, it's like, mm-hmm, LeBron James could be on the list. Don't get me wrong. I feel like that guy's superhuman. He might play till he's 40, 42, and he might play at a good level. But it's like, he's not going to leave L.A. Like, this is his final resting place. He will die in Brentwood. He'll die in L.A. He'll get buried in the hills. Like, yeah, he's not leaving.
Almost made a bad, bad joke there about Brentwood and dying in Brentwood that I'll stay away from. But
I also made a joke about the hills, about dying in the hills.
Shout out OJ. But well, I will say that, yeah, that's a funny aspect of this. Is this just the 30 best players in the league? Like, did Daryl Morey write a Bill Simmons column of like the top 30 trade value pieces in the league? Like, that's a class. I don't think Bill's wrote that in a couple years, but that used
Who's
to
got
be
the
like,
championship belt right now.
Yeah, you're right. That used to be like one of the best sports articles of the year. And I trash Bill Simmons a lot. But he probably got me into this more than anyone, podcasting and stuff. So that trade value chart used to be like my favorite article of the year. And Daryl Morey might have just like made his own on his own time. He's like, I'm bored. People are yelling at me online. I'm going to focus away from crypto for a minute and make a top 30 list. If any of these players become available, I'm in.
So I'm gonna rattle off a couple of names. All right.
Mm-hmm.
James Harden, player option.
Yeah.
Sign and trade. Bradley Beal, same thing. Player option. Would be probably a sign and trade.
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving, player option, sign and trade.
I'm starting to feel like this might happen. I'm starting to feel like it might happen.
I'm starting to feel like James Harden might leave.
Wow.
He's not boys with Kyrie. Kyrie and Durant are boys. You know, Durant already told Sean Marks that he nixed that Kyrie trade. I could see James Harden being like, what the fuck is going on here, man? We got that Looney Tune that doesn't want to play. We should have won last year. I don't know, man. Like, why would he come to Philly? I don't know. Why would he leave Brooklyn for Philly? Would not make any sense. But I guess he doesn't have a new trade clause, so it doesn't matter.
I don't think Harden's getting traded. I still just think – I know that the narratives that KD and Kyrie are really close, and I'm sure they are. But who knows where that's at right now, 15 games in, after KD just got embarrassed on TNT the other night, embarrassing me and all my followers that bet on my picks, taking the Nets. They got blown out by the Warriors, his former team. And we know how KD feels about the Warriors and how he feels about his exit. He was liking tweets all night the night before the game. I don't know if you saw that.
I saw the post-game ones he was liking about that Warriors reporter.
Yeah, he was liking a lot. He was active online, as KD often is. And you have to think that the online narrative about Kyrie and what's going on with their season, by the way, they're like 10-5. So it's not like they have like, it's not like they're a catastrophe yet. But you could say like KD might be dealing with this now at this point and being like, yeah, I know I'm boys with Kyrie, but like this is getting ridiculous. Like if we're not going to, you know, get a new rule on vaccines, which I think that the either the mayor or someone involved with New York or Brooklyn came out and said that that's not happening, like that those rules are staying. So Kyrie, I guess, is like kind of screwed until next year. If he plays, he can be a visitor in New York City and in California, but he can't play as a home player there. Mm-hmm. So that's bizarre. I mean, that is just like a bizarre twist in this whole thing. I didn't know that, actually. I just thought that he couldn't play in New York or California, period. So, you know, we'll be the anti-vax Sixers. I'm fine with it. Bring Kyrie in. You know, who cares? I'm down with it. It'd be so fun basketball-wise. Like, the layups he makes around the rim are just like some of the most incredible highlights of the last decade of basketball. And to be able to watch that for your team in clutch moments and in big moments, it's just like, I get that there's a lot that comes with it. There's sage in the courts. There's anti-vax stuff. There's the world is flat.
He'd never work here. Let me get back to the list. Zach LaVine.
Yeah, but he's staying put.
They didn't extend him. They didn't extend him yet.
Yeah, but Chicago's—it's crazy how good things are going for Chicago and Washington. I think we can cross Beal and LaVine off the list.
T.J. Warren.
No.
Colin Sexton.
No.
Chris Middleton.
No.
Player option in 2023. Okay. Fred VanVleet, player option 2023.
Yeah, probably. Probably on the list. I wonder. And this is always the interesting thing about Toronto when they've been involved in these Ben Simmons trade packages. Who does Daryl view as their most valuable piece? I actually just don't
Scotty
know.
Barnes.
Like, yeah, it might be. No, you might be right. It might be Scotty Barnes. Is it Scotty Barnes? Is it Fred VanVleet? Is it Pascal Siakam? Is it OG Anunoby? I think they're all kind of pretty close. Like they're all in within whatever iota or whatever you want to use for trade value. They're all pretty close in trade value, all four of them, depending on fit and what you need on your team. So Barnes probably makes the least sense for us. Pascal probably makes a little less sense for us. So I'd be curious to know if Daryl would rather have Fred VanVleet or OG Anunoby. I actually don't know what he would say.
Last one. Zion. Seriously. If shit really goes and hits the fan the way it sounds like it is – it is a bad organization over there, and it's not just Dan Griffin. It's a lot of things, from Benson to all the way down to the guy that just got hired yesterday.
I will put a lot of the blame on Griffin, though. That guy seems like the worst. Like he seems like the type of guy that he was on ESPN for a minute, and obviously he was the GM of LeBron's team. So when he got hired by New Orleans, people were like, "Oh, he's gonna fix it. He's gonna." I wanted him here. Really? Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because the whole LeBron sweepstakes year, I really wanted him here.
That's true. That makes sense. I remember he did a Woj pod right after he got hired, and it was like, yeah, you know, such a bright future, like all these things, all these catchwords and buzzwords. It's a yikes right now. I didn't read into the altercation. Him and Alvin Gentry got into it or something. Their former head coach, who's an assistant elsewhere, they got into it after the game, David Griffin and Alvin Gentry, which is kind of funny. But New Orleans is a train wreck. I mean, what are they, like 2-15, 2-14? And I know Zion's not playing, so it's hard to judge them. But Zion doesn't want to play for this team, clearly. I think he's done in New Orleans already. So do I think he's on the list to trade for? Maybe. I don't know. That's a tough question. Probably not. But if Zion becomes available, it might make things a lot easier for us in a three-team deal. Or maybe something like that.
Okay. You want to get the gambling picks before we get out of here?
Yeah.
All right. You start off. What's the record? I went 3-0. I still think I only gained a game.
Yeah. So you're down 8 going into this week. We have one on the board already.
Yes. Yeah. Tee it up for the people.
I got Chiefs -2.5. Kyle's got his Dallas Cowboys +2.5.
I want that +3.
Wait. Is it at +3 though? That's my question.
It hasn't moved to +3 yet, so I'll take +2.5, but I'm monitoring it. I will be monitoring it.
I don't think it will. I think
it is not. It is not budged. It is not. Yeah, moved.
I think more people feel the way you do about Dallas than me. I think more people view them as a Super Bowl contender than I do. So I think that line will probably go down, if anything, if I had to guess. But I'll take KC -2.5. I think they keep rolling here. And I think this is just a way more important game for Kansas City. Dallas, they don't have anyone breathing on their neck in the division. Obviously, they're playing for home field. But Kansas City's got to win every game that they can in that tight race, even if the Raiders and Broncos are kind of falling off, they still are going to have to compete with the Chargers for the rest of this year in the NFC. I think they are going to come out with a bit more sense of urgency. I think that's a bigger game for Kansas City. I'll take the home field in Arrowhead.
Yeah, if I win, I was right about the Cowboys being Super Bowl contenders. If I lose, it's because the NFL marketing machine needs Mahomes to be successful. I don't know if you read that Athletic article, but there was like the NFL does a lot better when Pat Mahomes is successful. So I don't disagree.
So the NFL does better for his entire career because he's been incredibly successful his entire career.
The ratings do better.
But there's been no unsuccess. Like you said, when he's successful, he's only been successful.
Has he only been successful?
He went like 13-3, 12-4.
Yeah, this is the first season. Would they go when they were fifth seed that one year?
I don't when think he got they hurt. Were. No, they won. You said that on another podcast, but I didn't correct you on it. They won the division. I think they got home field in that year.
Why don't you fucking correct me when I'm wrong about something?
You
could stop me and say, "Hey, idiot, you're wrong." What do you think?
I don't think I was positive about it, but I think I looked it up after the.
I thought they were fifth when that year that we thought his knee like separated from his body.
I think it was. I think they might have been like the Chargers.
The first fifth seed to like go to like the Super Bowl in a while.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think they did, but
I'm thinking the year against San Francisco.
It was the year with Philip Rivers where they beat them that one game. I feel like they beat them towards the end of the year, and it looked like maybe the Chargers were going to get a bye, and then Kansas City ended up getting one. So maybe that's what it was.
All right. My next one, Eagles -2. I think it's gone up to like 2.5, but I saw it was Eagles -2. I think we get our first win at home. We're really good against shitty QBs.
I'm going to do you a favor.
Okay. You're not going to take it?
No, I'm absolutely taking it. No fucking chance of not taking it. But we're taking money line together. We don't need to worry about fucking points. We got too much to worry about, Kyle. Let's just worry about getting a goddamn win at home. We're 0-4 at home. Let's get a win at the link. Let's make your post-game interviews with the people a joyous.
I'm gonna hug a lot of people if we win.
Let's just get a win. Let's just put a win down, and you know, we'll worry about money line. We'll worry about points another week.
Love it. So I guess we're only doing two picks together this week.
But I will to give a little like background there. The Eagles scored 21 plus in 8 straight games. The offense is rolling. Sirianni, the last 3 games, we've said it ad nauseum on this podcast. He's wowed us. He's wowed me with his improvement as a play caller, going to the run, committing to the run, finding an identity on offense which they have. It's going to be a little tough in this game with the Saints being so good as a rush defense, but Hurts had his best game since he played New Orleans last week, and Hurts played a better New Orleans team last year, as I said to Bob Wankel. I think that this is a more inferior Saints team than the Saints team that Hurts, a younger Hurts and a less experienced Hurts, was able to pick apart. I think he's going to win this game. I think Devonta Smith has a huge game. I wasn't actually as impressed with New Orleans last week against Tennessee as a lot of other people seem to be. I don't think Tennessee's all that good anyway. So I think them making a comeback from a game that they were behind in pretty big most of the game, it didn't make me like, oh, man, they're a serious contender. But the main point here, and I said it too many times on too many podcasts, on way too many, it's just come out, it feels like word vomit coming out of my mouth. But you can evaluate the Eagles and handicap the Eagles based on the quarterback they play.
Washington football team +3. Dogs are crushing it. I'll take the half. Dogs are crushing it this year at like a 61% clip, and I think it's dogs away are crushing it at like 62-63. It's nuts this year.
Wow.
I don't believe in Cam. I have memories of last year. I don't know if it was Belichick's offense or not Belichick's offense. I don't know if it was Josh McDaniels' offense. I don't know if Cam wasn't healthy. I don't know what was going on, but Cam looked bad last year. And the Flacco Cam Monday Night Football game is just plays in my mind because I took Flacco and he covered. So it was glorious. CMC will probably shove it down my throat and make me eat my words, but I'm riding with the Heine King right now. And if anyone wants to sprinkle any more on that, I like the under too.
Who would you take right now? And I don't know. I won't do who would you take because it's a fantasy question. I know you're not a fantasy guy. Who you starting in fantasy? Tua against the Jets or Cam Newton against Washington? That's what I got to figure out right now. Oh, it's tough.
That is tough. I hate left-handed quarterbacks. I hate the way they throw. I hate the way they look. They look so unorthodox. you got to think they're doing, they're going to do a steady game of Cam. You got to think Cam. Well, no, maybe not though, because like the Washington football team running defense is good, but now not with Chase Young. And I think Montez Sweat is on IR. Like, I think you got to go Cam.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. That's what I'm thinking right now too.
Ugh, I hate that. I would hate to be in that situation.
Yeah, Stafford's on a bye. It's rough. But I'll say I'm surprised you didn't take my next pick. I thought we might literally have our pick against each other and then two picks together because they're your baby Bengals for a reason.
I know.
They're your baby Bengals for a reason. And I'm more so, and this is always dangerous. I did it last. A few days ago against Stanford with Valparaiso in college basketball. It's dangerous to bet against the team instead of betting on a team, because what's happening here is I'm not betting on the Bengals because I'm confident that the Bengals are going to get right. I'm betting against the Raiders because I'm confident the Raiders aren't going to get right. I think that the swoon continues for the rest of the season. I think Cincinnati just has a bit more like young excitement injected into their program, enthusiasm in the fan base. I think Cincinnati fans feel better about where they're at right now than Raiders fans feel. So that's not a real reason that they're going to win the game, but I like Cincinnati to win in Las Vegas' 11th home game of the season.
Are you giving money line? You're taking money line?
Money line. Give me the okay. Money. I think it's a pick 'em right now, actually.
It was minus one last night, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was a pick 'em on some boards. Yeah, I stayed away from it because I was like, what is Vegas trying to tell me right now? Like, what is Vegas doing? Like, you got to think if like Vegas is tailing that line, like they have some inside sources. They have to have something. And I mean, they're right down the street from them. Like, I feel like they're in the pockets. I don't know, man. That Raiders line scares the shit out of me. It's like, why are the baby Bengals only given one? I feel like they should be given at least 4.5.
I'll tell you why. Those dirty Vegas handicappers are Raiders fans now. They've been converted. They're rooting for Vegas. I don't know. I thought that the Raiders line last week was absurd, too. I thought the Chiefs only were like 2.5. They ended up winning 41-14 in Vegas. I think Vegas is just off on this Raiders team. I think they thought they sucked at the beginning of the year, by the way. I remember week one against Baltimore. I think they were plus 10 at Baltimore on Monday Night Football. I bet Raiders spread, and then I live bet their money line. They ended up winning the game. It was a crazy game. It feels like awesome it was game, yeah. 3 years ago now.
One of the 17 home games that Raiders had this year.
Yeah, it's insane. They only play home games. Me and Kyle have figured out. They just – even some games I think that have been listed. Like if you go to their schedule right now, it's like, oh, they played at the Browns or like whatever. That game was in Vegas. It was a sham.
Yeah. Just like the Chargers play all away games, the Raiders play like all home games. No, seriously. Like I feel like every away game I have not gotten it on my red zone. That's probably why. Yeah. I feel like that. But all right. Well, that's the podcast. Rate, review, subscribe. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook. Subscribe on the YouTube. I hope to see you down there at the stadium this weekend. I'll be there for the post game. I think it's going to be a good one. I think it's going to be a win. It's going to be a lot of hugs going around. It's going to be a lot of happiness going around. First win of the season. Let's make a video, people.